This is Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Tuesday, August 9th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. Pete Sampson joins us from The Athletic. Notre Dame is, as we speak now, 5 days into preseason camp. We were around for three of the first four, full practice on Friday, and then abbreviated observations on Saturday and Monday. Pete Sampson, your thoughts on what you've seen up to this point?
I thought that the offensive line, when you see it in person, made me more optimistic about that group. And then when you see, I think you wrote this yesterday and I heard this on Friday, when you see Harry Hiestand being super positive about stuff.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing that you saw. I think yesterday I was watching Hiestand and it was Alt, Patterson, Correll sort of working in the left side together. And it's like, damn, that group has a chance to be really, really good. So position-wise, that probably made the biggest impression on me. And then individual-wise, it'd be a toss-up between either Tobias Merriweather or Audric Estime for like, oh, that looks maybe even a little bit better than I thought it would.
The most impressive to me, and it was not in the full because I was watching defense, briefly watching the running backs one of the days last week, I thought Chris Tyree looked like a new veteran running back football player. I thought Tyree's feet looked so much better than everybody else's, and he just looks like he belongs now as the lead running back. And Tim and I said it, I think, on Instant Analysis. Lead running back does not mean 20 to 25 carries very much anymore, and it definitely doesn't for Tyree. But we were saying things like, Tyree, 9 carries, 5 more touches. Right. Now we're saying like Tyree, 15 carries, a few touches of the backfield, that type of thing. And I think that allows a guy like Estime, who I cannot wait to watch in pads, to be a complimentary back. That will be fun to watch, considering I agree with you on the offensive line and the Logan Diggs news. I mean, I don't care if Logan Diggs doesn't play against Ohio State. If Logan Diggs is ready to roll for 11 more, that is fantastic. Because all of a sudden, you have four running backs and you no longer have a major running back problem. Like, the running back problem was you have three, and what if one guy goes down? You can get through with four. I mean, four could get you through.
Yeah, no, definitely. Pete, with regard to what you said about Notre Dame's offensive line, Al Golden commented yesterday what a handful it is to play against that offensive line just because of the sheer length and size of that group. Now they look good. Yeah, he had his back to me, so I'm absolutely not positive, but I believe that Harry Hiestand used the word fantastic when he was, and I thought, I don't think I've ever heard Harry Hiestand say fantastic.
You've heard it. Better and good next.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. So that was promising, but it was veteran guys that had isolated in a drill and were doing a good job. For those that have joined us for our instant analysis after practice, Tim, I'm in complete agreement with Chris Tyree. I think he looks really, really good. And your guy, Pete, is Riley Mills is just so impressive physically and not just looking at him physically, just the way he moves around because he's, in a lot of respects, he's built like a tackle, but he plays like a defensive end. And that's just a really unique, rare combination. I was pleasantly surprised to see how well Avery Davis was moving around. There didn't seem to be any real restrictions. Yeah. I think Marcus Freeman said, just on the number of reps, but that's understandable. Jaden Thomas said that really good first day. So, there's some good looking football players out there. When my initial reaction when I saw some of the sizes, some of the weights, I wondered, wow, is that too much when I see Michael Mayer at 265? But then, watching him yesterday, I don't see anything that's really limiting his mobility. 265 is a lot, but he carries it really, really well.
Yeah, and he'll be going 1,000 miles an hour at times in camp and he'll weigh 260, 259 when the season's up. That's how it goes in these situations. He's a veteran at this point. He knows. Tommy Rees gave us the only answer we need on Michael Mayer when somebody asked somebody asked him how Michael Mayer looks in camp and he's like gave him the little look like what do you think, and he goes Mike all right.
And then he
next
moved
question
on.
What are you asking here? This is nothing relevant to what could be.
I don't think that we've seen this. I know that I haven't, but Al Golden spoke very highly of Jalen Snead yesterday, Which oh, is he good did. To hear. Yeah, he did.
I missed that part. Good. No, that, absolutely. Okay, that's who I came in late to Al Golden for. Good. I did not get that when I was transcribing.
So that's promising. That doesn't mean that he's ready to jump in and, but that and was great. Play. But that's good to hear because I don't, you know, we were a little bit surprised at his size. I think he was 198 in the spring, and he's bigger than that now. And off the top of my head, you probably know, Tim.
Yeah, he put on, I think he's 210, 212. Yeah.
So that's a good amount to add, not too much, and a good amount. And it sounds like
actually,
Tui Alamaka is another guy that, I mean, that guy's going to be really good. I think he's going to be a really good football player for Notre Dame.
I'm going to give my first compliment to Jalen Snead, and I didn't know that it was a compliment. I walked in 30 seconds after the Al Golden interview started. I was talking to Kaiser, and I thought he was talking about Foskey when he's answering the question. There we go. That's as good of a compliment. I ran it back on my transcript. I'm like, that must have been Foskey, right? He's talking about how we all know he can move. He's so fast and everything, but now he's fighting off double teams. Oh, it must be Foskey. Good. Foskey got better. Jalen Snead. That's good to hear. I like that. But Tui Halamaka, you can't look at the guy and not think linebacker. Like that, he was rated fairly. I mean, he's in the top 140. He might have been undervalued. Tui Halamaka.
I think he was because he was a little bit too big early in his high school career, which he's admitted. And then he trimmed down, and then I think we saw a better version of him coming out of high school. So that was a guy that when I rated them at the end, when they signed, I thought, you know what, I'm going to move him up because I got a feeling about him. He's been, especially since the spring, he's been more impressive than I anticipated.
Bo Bauer said he's a very smart football player. He's like, people always say instincts, but he's also smart in that he studies, and he's the one guy. He didn't say he's the one guy. I shouldn't put words in his mouth. He said he's a guy that isn't just learning what to do, but why and how this matters to do it that way.
Well, that's impressive because we did have an opportunity to talk to James Laurinaitis yesterday, and he's impressive. He's fun. We have got to insist that, I mean, when we talk to assistant coaches, he's just got to be included in it because he's too much fun. But again, he was talking about, I mean, we all know that JD Bertrand and Jack Kaiser they're very intelligent football players. Yeah. He threw Bo Bauer into that group. And now we're throwing Tui Alamaka in there. I'm Maris Leofau too, but I think Leofau just, you know, jumps out at you physically. And so that tends to be the first thing that you say about him.
I want to bring one thing up about Leofau since we wrote down linebackers as something to talk about here, and this won't step on our questions. Marcus Freeman in the spring, Marcus Freeman in our summer interview, Al Golden and James Laurinaitis all mentioned reining in Maris Leofau's exuberance at practice and keeping his teammates safe. There's got to be something that there's a reason that's being said. That's three different coaches, four different instances. Every time you talk about Leofau, it's reining him in, reining him in, reining him in. Love his energy, reining him in, reining him in. It's like, what?
And it goes kind back to the spring game, right? I mean, the penalty there. And I remember
there's another one. Yeah.
I remember talking to Leofau last summer for, I think it was a story I was doing on MTA, and I was asking about Freeman coming in, and you know, this is defensive coordinator, and Freeman got together with MTA and Maris and Botello and basically said, like, you guys are too emotional. People think you play out of control. So I think that's just sort of how it's always been for Leofau and Botello, much less so MTA.
Less so MTA, yeah.
But he was like, This is what people think about you guys. You guys can change that narrative, but you gotta make a conscious effort to do it.
All right, let's talk about quarterbacks because so much was made of one practice, which was, it was a full practice, and it was about 40, 45 minutes of red zone work. And I do have some stats here just to put everything in a little bit of perspective. Stats don't tell you everything. Just like on defense, tackle totals don't tell you everything. But in the red zone, and this is unofficial, but I think I tracked it pretty accurately.
And this was one practice. This is the Friday open practice.
Yeah, it was an open practice. And Tyler Buckner, I had him at, and everything pretty much was, if it was a completed pass, it was a touchdown because it was in the red zone.
Yeah, it was in the 10-yard. When we say red zone, we should be clear. Yeah,
it was
red.
It's been like the 10-yard line the whole time.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I had Tyler Buckner 5-for-12 with 5 TDs and Drew Pine with 10-for-16 with 9 TDs.
I just want to put this out on the podcast since it's Irish Illustrated that I apologize to your readers for complimenting Drew Pine. I'm so sorry that I did that. I should have known better. It's totally my bad. I'm sorry.
You should know better. For the record, we don't I don't care who wins the job. I want the best quarterback to win the job. I don't care who that is. I expected it to be Tyler Buchner, and I still do now because I still think that he does more things and that Pine is the perfect relief guy. But I did really like the way Drew Pine, I said something to Tommy Reese about
running,
leaving the pocket. Yeah, leaving, and he was like, it's just kind of sliding towards the direction that the receivers are going. And however you want to say that, I understand where he's coming from there, but I thought Pine was better. We're not going to be cheerleaders here. We're going to observe and tell you what we think. What we say we think may be wrong, but when I say these numbers, I thought I
think he was better that day. He was better that day.
And that's it. That's it. We're not saying Pine should start it. He was better for that 45-minute segment.
And he
I thought he was resourceful. He was more resourceful than Buchner was in finding something open and getting it to a receiver.
Pine was much more likely to run with the twos, which is significant for the Friday practice we saw. And so Tyler Buchner is going to start, and Drew Pine will be a better version of Drew Pine from last year as the number two. Like, both those things are good.
See, I know what you're saying, but I don't like to bring in the whole number two thing because he's throwing against the number two secondary. So, I mean, it's a wash then. Maybe it's not a wash, but I think that detail has to be included. But I'm already blowing this out of proportion. It was one segment. I'm just trying to clarify that it was one segment. And I thought number 10 played better than number 12. That's it.
Yeah, I had the way looking at it is I had defense only. So when this is happening and you don't have defense only, if you're Pete and you're just watching practice or you're Tim and you're watching offense, every snap I looked at the seven defensive players, every snap, to see who's on the field so I could figure it out. I had no idea who was throwing the ball most of the time. I was only looking at the defense. So when there was that beautiful rollout diving catch by Lindsey with Mickey and great coverage and Tui Halamaka chasing, I said to Pete, that was a nice throw by Buchner. And he goes, that was Pine. So that is the difference too. Like, I expected it because he was rolling right on the move, delivering an athletic throw. I was not looking at the quarterback. Yeah. I just saw the ball I think it's part of its expectations. I expected that to be Buchner. I think it's great that it was Pine because Drew Pine's going to be called upon this year.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I didn't say anything about this in instant analysis. I haven't said anything about it now. That was a great play by Braden Lindsey. That was a tremendous, Braden Lindsey. It was both guys. And it was absolutely the play of the day that we saw. Enough of that for now. Wide receivers, I think we're all impressed with Tobias Merriweather. He's listed 197, 198, something like that. Tim, like you said,
expect
by the end of camp, he'll be back down to 191 probably. Because he is thin. He is not, that's not an ultra strong looking body right now, but he's a tall freshman. And he's been impressive. Avery Davis, I thought, was impressive. He was impressive that day. I love the way Lorenzo Styles looks now. I comment about it in yesterday's instant analysis about kick returns, how he seemed to fit the part. But I think Lorenzo Styles is on the absolute verge of having a great sophomore year. And I do want to say this because I think I left it out of the practice report. You would think I would include this because information is so hard to come by in five periods. But Joe Wilkins Jr. was running sprints across the back of the end zone from one sideline to the next. So that's a really good sign. That doesn't mean he can put his foot in the ground, plant and cut and stuff, but that's an excellent sign. Not necessarily that Joe Wilkins is going to make a significant difference with the receiving corps, but a veteran guy with a small group and mostly, or at least probably about half of them younger.
Yeah.
It'd be good to have Joe Wilkins back in action to just help that overall group.
Yeah, I agree with the Styles observation. He explodes off the turf too. They were doing some drills to go get the high balls. And of course, Merriweather and Colsey were going up and getting the high balls, and it made it a little easy. And even Chauncey Stuckey was like, all right, I'm going to challenge you next time. And he didn't throw a great high pass, and he was mad at himself because he's like, I'm going to challenge you. And he throws to Merriweather, and Merriweather looked like he was half jumping off of his bad leg and easily catching it anyway at his high point. Stuckey's like, oh, man. He didn't challenge him well enough. But then he throws low, and Deion Colsey, catches it. But he says, all right, man, you got to bend too. You're not all going to be up there high for you. So it's a lot. These five period things are just a lot of drill work, and you try to get something learn to try to get something from the coaches with the players in them, because it's better to hear the coach instruct them than for us to say ridiculous things like he had a good elbow turn and foot placement on that pass. Like, it's, you know, if we hear a coach say something and correct someone, or correct someone and then they do it right the next time, that's what you want to
say. Which is what I'm glad you pointed out, which is what Merriweather did, because clearly in a drill he was exposing the football when we were still inside. And Stuckey showed him exactly, you know, how to do it. But that's a freshman. So he's been really impressive. He's been impressive all summer. But I've seen, and that wasn't the only time that he really instructed him, saying that you saw the same thing too, Tim. You know, he's a freshman, so there's a lot of instruction there. Pete, jumping over the defensive side of the ball, I think this team has a chance to be great defensively. Very, very, very good. Let me hesitate to say great before I see.
It's hard because they play the best Lewis
and how that
in the game.
Yeah,
they're not going to be great on September 3rd.
That's going to be really. That's a tall order. But you know, in the trenches, can you get a stalemate in the trenches against their offensive line? I think you can, and then take it a next step with the pass rush. Just your overall thoughts on the defense.
I think that the line. I'd sort of been banking on, Foskey, Jason Adamolola, and then my guy, Riley Mills, who will now be referred to as my guy the rest of the season. But then I didn't really spend much time on what did Howard Cross give you? I don't know. I just he's the fourth defensive lineman. He just needs to sort of be okay to good. And then he was penetrating all over the place on Friday. And you're like, well, wait a minute. If this guy can also hurt you to force you to not scheme everything to Foskey or not scheme everything to Jason Adamolola, and then you have Justin Adamolola too, I think the defensive line could be better than what I thought, and I thought it was already going to be very good. The Golden linebackers all, certainly the Bertrand, Kaiser, Bauer, if you're able to play at a very complicated yet high level and kind of high IQ stuff. I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into that, honestly, when I thought about the summer and what the defense is going to look like. But if we're talking about the defense at the second level, really all executing at a, people hate this, but executing at a Joe Schmidt kind of level, pre-ankle injury, where you know where to be all the time, 100% of the time, that would sort of change how I view what the defense could be a little bit.
Well, people can hate that comment, Pete, but Joe Schmidt was good before he got hurt. He was. And it wasn't always, he was undersized. It wasn't always flashy, but he knew what he was doing out there, and that was.
And Jack Kaiser is a lot faster than Joe Schmidt, and Jack Kaiser can know what he's supposed to do just like Joe Schmidt, only get there faster. Same with Bo Bauer, who's more imposing than Joe Schmidt and know what to do, and then he comes up and drills you as a – have you seen Bo – Pete, you got to look at Bo Bauer up close. I interviewed him yesterday. That dude got bigger in his upper body. He is a guy that is majoring in football because he graduated 7 years ago from Notre Dame.
Yeah, and he committed to Brian Van Gorder.
God. He didn't play baseball for Notre Dame because Brian Van Gorder told him not to. That's how long ago Bo Bauer could have been in the College World Series, Tim. You could have been covering him there. It's all Van Gorder's fault. It's always his fault, no matter what we look at.
A couple other guys I want to jump around to, and we hinted to this as we were doing our counting down the Irish. DJ Brown is going to start opposite Brandon Joseph. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, I agree. Yes. I'm not sure. I think that's a fine thing. I don't think Ramon Henderson went out and got him though either. Is that's fair to say, right?
No, I would agree. And I don't like the narrative that the perception DJ Brown struggled against Oklahoma State. What DB did not struggle against Oklahoma State? But he struggled. I mean, he slipped a couple times. Yeah, it was not a good game for him. But think about how well he played after Kyle Hamilton was injured. That's what I think. Sometimes we focus on one instance, and you need to look at the entire body of work. And I think DJ Brown, from what little we've seen up to this point, has played pretty well. Before we go to segment two, since our last podcast, Notre Dame did get verbal commitments from Jaden Osbury and Ben Minnick and Dylan Edwards and Peter Jones. So they have continued, up to that point, continued to excel in the recruiting part of things. But anything else you guys want to mention from the practices that we've seen before we go to segment two?
I like the tone that Freeman set after practice one, where
he was
really demanding. And if you sort of watched his message to, like, you know, when they huddle around him, like, it wasn't like, hey, great job, guys. Like, good effort on the first day. It was, do your freaking job better next time. And I think that message probably hits well with a roster that has gotten to know him very well. He has so much credibility with the players and how hard he can push them. But, you know, that was always the thing. He said, you know, you can only push a guy as far as they trust you. Well, now the pushing starts last week. That I think is significant. The fact that he was so demanding on day one.
And I thought his comments on that, when he said, I have a plan, he was pretty pointed with it. He said, I have a specific plan to get us through this camp to this game. And he doesn't want people messing that up, and not being available messes up that plan. And if you're not available, somebody else is available.
I was a little surprised. I mean, we're talking about heat exhaustion, right? I mean,
a lot of breaks. Like, I mean, Blake Fisher's obviously a big guy, and Zeke Curl was going a million miles an hour, but they give them, they had period five was a break.
Well,
like, period five was a running clock break. And then
I realize that, but you know, they have GPS.
Yeah.
They're attached to the GPS system. And, you know, if the numbers tell you that a guy's overheating or his heart rate or whatever, I guess you should have tended to that before the first practice. I mean, you had to do that the previous 2 months.
That's what I interpreted.
Okay.
As, like,
well, then
he wanted the players to, like, you know, the day before, 2 days before, you got to be more on your stuff. That's how I interpreted
Then he should have addressed that earlier in the summer, I guess, is my initial reaction to that. Look, we're just spitballing here. I'm not criticizing, but I did find it kind of interesting. And he is, I mean, I think we're going to find that, yeah, he's a player's coach, but I don't think there's any doubt that he is going to consistently hold them to a high standard. I mean, just exactly what he said after practice. When they're not playing well, when they're not productive, you know, Brian Kelly would go into his Brian Kelly speak and say the same thing year after year after year. I think this is a little bit more fresh and sometimes a little bit more attacking, and that's good because, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a relationship here. He's a player's coach, but he is going to be demanding. Coming up next, Burning Up the Boards, segment two. The biggest pro football overlays in Vegas are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes only at Circa Sports, with two ways to win and no rake. Circa Sports Million with quarterly payouts and 100% payback. Play Circa Survivor and select one team each week with no point spread. Take in the big money with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. Visit circasports.com for details.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We start with a question from CMU Pens fan. What will hinder Notre Dame more in 2022? A lack of receiving depth or inconsistent kicking game?
That's a tough question, because if it is an inconsistent kicking game, then that's going to hamper them more. I don't know if it has to be inconsistent. We've talked about this, that they didn't look good a few years ago with going into the summer. I think the bigger problem, until we see differently, is an inconsistent kicking game, because if you're going to miss, nowadays you can't go 14 for 20 inside the 40-yard line, right? And you can't go 3 for 9. From 50 and more, you have to be able to hit. You have to be able to hit your field goals.
I hard lean towards the kicking game on this one. I think, you know, the receiving depth will hurt them a little bit, but I don't know who the equivalent of Tobias Merriweather and Lorenzo Styles are.
I get where you're coming from, but I'm definitely saying lack of receiving depth, because that's such a more significant part of the game over the course of 12 regular season games. You know, now if everybody stays healthy, which is a rarity, But I think that Blake Groupie, he clearly is not going to have the range that 6'3", 6'4" Jonathan Dorr had, but let's not blow this out of proportion. And, you know, again, he's going from Arkansas State to Notre Dame, so the magnitude of every one of his kicks is going to be completely different than what he dealt with. But last year he was 20 for 25 and John Dorr was 16 for 21. So let's not blow it out of proportion. Clearly length is going to be an issue. He's not a big enough guy and he hasn't had enough success from distance. But I think the receiving core is a much bigger portion of the game. So I'm more concerned about that.
Really quickly, Blake Groupie can go ahead and miss two more field goals than he did last year, as long as he hits two game winners at the buzzer on the road.
That's true.
Jonathan Dorr did.
No doubt.
From 48 yards or longer. Yeah,
A bomb.
Yeah. No, that like something like that, that's probably not going to be duplicated in 2022. Yeah.
Irish from A2, will Tobias Merriweather's freshman impact this season be closer to TJ Jones, Lorenzo Styles, or Michael Floyd? I'd like to point out there's one more guy missing, my man, Kevin Stefferson.
That was my answer. Stefferson is my right-hand vote.
And his numbers would be more in line with Jones and Styles, except for the touchdowns. Did he have five?
He had five touchdowns.
He had five as a freshman. That's
pretty wild. One out of Dory Jackson.
Yeah. No small feat there. Michael Floyd had seven touchdowns as a freshman.
He was
46 receptions. I wouldn't predict that. You know, TJ Jones had 531 snaps as a freshman.
Yeah, he won that job in the spring. Remember? It was just like, holy cow, that guy's a...
Yeah. I mean, for the record, TJ Jones, 2010, 23 catches, 13.3 yard average, three touchdowns. Lorenzo Styles last year, 24 catches, 14.3, one touchdown. And Floyd, I don't think it's going to approach Floyd. I think his snaps, Styles had 249. I think Merriweather's snaps will be somewhere between the 249 of Styles and the 531 of TJ Jones.
I think that's a good call.
Yes, I agree.
Question from Fanhood. What is the Audric Estime vibe? We know he has physicality, but has he taken his game to the next level?
I liked him on Friday.
Yeah. I still want to defer to Pads because I want to see him put one on somebody and then be like, yep.
I agree with that. I don't think we can judge him until we see that. I mean, obviously he's extremely impressive physically. But I saw another instance, and again, they weren't in pads, but where I thought he should have kept it between the tackles and he kicked it outside. That's where you evaluate whether Audric Estime is, to use the term, taking his game to the next level. If he can recognize, he has to mainly be a between the tackles guy. Now, I will say that in the times that we've seen him kick it outside, including the spring, he's pretty damn good at it.
Yeah.
With 229 pounds.
Plus he gets you in space. That's a tough square up tackle. You know, if he gets you in space and he turns his shoulders with his quick feet and a little bit of momentum, that's not the easiest. That's not the easiest task for corners and safeties. Irish from A2, which is more likely, and this is a downer, both Keon Keeley and Peyton Bowen end up at Notre Dame, or neither Keeley nor Bowen end up at Notre Dame?
Well, they're both verbally committed to Notre Dame, so I'm going to lean in that direction. I think it's more likely they get one as opposed to two. That's probably, you know, the better choice of those two options.
I guess to answer the question directly, I think neither is more likely than both.
But one is more likely than neither.
Correct.
Yeah, that's how I go that way as well.
Question from Dashing Domer. I saw a 4HL thread recently where several posters were expressing their hope that Junior Tuialamaka and Prince Kali would soon replace Bo Bauer and JD Bertrand in the starting lineup. What are your thoughts about that?
I put my thoughts in Monday Musings, and I know the four starting linebackers for this year. There's going to be four guys that start unless someone gets hurt, and then there has to be another one. It is going to be Jack Kaiser because he has no competitor at Rover and he's a very good player, but I'm just saying Jack Kaiser is not going to be replaced by one of those other guys. Bo Bauer and JD Bertrand and Maris Leifau, and they will all start a bunch of games with Kaiser starting 13. The other guys dividing their other 39 or what is it? 26 dividing the other 26 among them.
You could have made this question a quick hitter for me. I have no thoughts on that because it's not happening.
It says, what are your thoughts about that? My thought is that that's a silly thing to hope for.
It is a very slow thing to hope for.
I mean, unless Tuialamaka and Kali are just they play like veteran linebackers that have done it forever, but that's not going to happen. That's unrealistic. The four guys, including Leofau, those are the guys you want on the field.
I think you could find a role for Tui Halamaka because Leofau is so versatile, and Bertrand could have more straight up base will snaps than Leofau, but Leofau is playing in various packages and will. That Bertrand, all those snaps we thought he might be using at Mike aren't happening now. So Bo Bauer could use a break too, because Bo Bauer is part of the third down package.
No doubt.
See Tui Halamaka getting in there and taking more snaps than we ever. He could be the true number two Mike, which we weren't saying. We were saying, ooh, how's he going to get on there as the number three Mike? Where now I think he could be the true number two Mike.
Yeah. Do you know when? I think you know this because I think it was said in the spring, but I asked Bertrand this again. Do you know when he suffered the injury that required left wrist surgery?
I vaguely recall it was like the Wisconsin, September though, right?
August.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I thought it was before the season.
August. And people talk about JD Bertrand like he's a bum. Are you kidding me? That's a guy that you should honor as a true Notre Dame football player.
For sure. Realistically, they want to see Leofau in the flat and coverage over.
I agree. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see him outside a whole lot outside the tackle box, having to put his foot in the ground and change direction. I get that. But
yeah. I think the best way, like Drew Tranquil and Tavon Coney were overextended in 2018 when they had to do 850 snaps. So JD Bertrand should not be hitting.
No, he was way overextended.
Play like a champ 7. Thus far in camp, are you getting any Reese/Golson vibes with Buckner Pine as far as how the season may play out? And this combines with Irish McCarthy. Do you see a scenario where both quarterbacks play against Ohio State? Boy, I have not seen that in print in a while, and that made me
weird. Pete, go for it.
No Reese/Golson vibes, because Buckner and Pine, I think, actually get along just fine. I think they're friends. Do I see a scenario where both quarterbacks play against Ohio State? I guess if this question is being asked on the premise, like, do they have a package for Pine? No, I don't see that scenario. If both play, either Buckner got hurt or somebody's getting blown out and you can just put in the backup at the end of the game.
Yeah, or he's really struggling and they're just looking for a spark or something.
So all bad things is if both play.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that's part of the plan. I understand, you know, it's a legitimate question. I understand because, you know, these guys are, I mean, we have a question later about, you know, I think it's right at the end about what you think about the offense and what's going to happen in it. I mean, I think it all goes back to the fact that you've got two young, inexperienced quarterbacks. That hasn't changed. We knew that. We knew that all along. That's why we've said, you know, I'm saying if Buckner plays full time, he's going to get picked 10 or 12 times. That's just the nature of the game.
Yep. I agree.
So anyway, Frick 50 asks, the coach I have heard the least about over the summer is Al Golden. What is your impression of how he is doing both on the trail, recruiting trail, and as a coordinator?
Let's get well timed because we talked to him yesterday. And every time I talk to Al Golden, I'm impressed with Al Golden. I think I would love his teaching style if I played for him. And I could also tell that he is probably really demanding that you be on your stuff when you show up to his meetings and practice. I don't think he's suffering the, if you are not able to do what Jack Kaiser and Bo Bauer and Bertrand and Leofau and maybe Tui Halamaka are able to do on the fly, like if you're learning these things, he has options that they aren't you. Cause you need to know what's going on in his defense.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about him as a coordinator, especially as he's working with and building a relationship with Marcus Freeman. I think that's a huge, huge strength of him being on the staff. I mean, in terms of a recruiter, I'm not sure I would put him in the top half of the staff in terms of recruiting skills, but I think that says more about the guys that I would put in the top half of the staff.
You know, I mean, there's been a consistent, steady stream of high rated defensive players committing to Notre Dame. So, you know, I think he's doing a pretty good job there. We have a tendency to say, okay, a great quarterback committed, that's Tommy Reese. A great running back committed, that's the running back coach. And I don't know that it's just not as simple as that. it's also the head coach. I mean, obviously, especially with Marcus Freeman. So, I don't know. I mean, he must be doing something right. And I've always liked the choice of Al Golden. I think he's, you've heard me say it many times. I think he's a Notre Dame guy, a Notre Dame type of guy, a Notre Dame fit. And I think, you know, it helps having very smart linebackers. There's no doubt that he has that. But I think that Al Golden has a way about him that he makes everything that he teaches them understandable.
You know, the linebacker part, Tim, I thought it was funny how you were asking the question, kind of like knowing what Al Golden thinks about the intelligence of his linebackers and everything. If you took every coach that came in and dropped them in their room and they saw those guys play for the first time and they had meetings with all those guys for the first time, then they all came out and talked to you and they had to tell the exact truth, Al Golden would be pretty high on the list of like, well, thank you very much for hiring me at Notre Dame to be your linebackers coach and defensive, just remove defensive coordinator. I mean, just be like, wow, thank that worked. Yeah. Like Al Washington think to himself, no kidding. All right. Well, yeah, I can go three deep. This should be fun.
I'm glad you mentioned Al Washington because I'm impressed with the way Al Washington coaches. He comes out there with a lot of energy. No, this is not a comparison to Mike Elston because Mike Elston was the same way.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He was. But I like the way Al Washington coaches them. He is enthusiastic. He's on them. And I think you see the players react accordingly to the energy that he brings out to the field as well.
Next from Denver Maximus. What is more surprising? Logan Diggs might be able to play sooner than expected, or there might be a quarterback competition.
Well,
Pete,
there's not a quarterback competition. And I'm surprised Logan Diggs is going to be able to play sooner than expected.
I'm not positive he's going to play sooner than expected.
Well, I mean, I'm not exactly sooner than week four, like he's just to have him out there in that way. I think it's good. I he said hopeful first third or upper third, whatever the term he did, used.
Yeah. So first month,
I think he'll play before BYU. And I didn't think he'd play till BYU. So I guess sooner than I expected.
But see, here's the thing though. I mean, if he's not ready for Ohio State and you don't play him and then you have the next two opponents, wouldn't you like to be conservative there? No, I know if he's ready, he's ready. If he's ready, play. I get that. But if there's some uncertainty about Toledo and Cal, then wait till you go to North Carolina in week four. But I don't know. I don't know. He surely, I mean, he looked good. And he, you know, for a guy in a red jersey, he keeps putting himself in some physical situations.
Did you see him fall down, Pete, when he in a drill on his shoulder?
On Friday, I saw him try to plow into Houston Griffin.
Right, at the goal line. Yeah. So, and McCullough talked to him after that, too. So you got to pick your spots. But I don't know. Let's see. I think that I would agree with you guys. I think what we saw this weekend indicates that, okay, he's coming along. He's coming along pretty well.
I'm going to add a writing question, Tim, because you mentioned Toledo. What's going to be a tougher week two opponent, Toledo last year or Marshall this year? I'm going with Toledo last year. What's tough?
Did I say Toledo?
Yeah. They were, that was a tough opponent. That was not an easy game.
I still have Toledo on my mind. No, that was not an easy game. Marshall's got some things too. They really do.
We're not calling upon Tyler Buckner to have his finger pulled back into place to win the game on a touchdown pass. Yeah, I mean, that was quite a thing.
Marshall is a successful lower level football program. And so that could be, you know, that could be a little bit challenging. Question from Touchdown Irish. What is more important for Marcus Freeman to know/do against Ohio State? One, clock management. Two, know when to go for it on fourth down. Three, when to speed up, slow down the game. And four, which personnel packages to use at different points of the game.
I really like two and three here. And I really hadn't thought about how important it could be against Ohio State to know when to go for it on fourth down, because you're going to have to. That's like the minutia, I guess, a little more than when to speed up and slow down the game and that type of thing. And clock management, of course, that's always going to be on our mind until it's not after the Fiesta Bowl, right? That's why that question's asked that way. The clock management's in there.
Yeah. No, I think if we're talking about how does Notre Dame win the game, number two will be the reason that they won it.
Four. That's a good one. That's a really good one to add there. Who asked that question? I got to be right here. Touchdown Irish. Good job.
I'm always concerned about clock management, and that's just exacerbated by what happened in the Fiesta Bowl. But I think that's something that Notre Dame will end up paying a little bit more attention to. I mean, as far as preparation for it, and having people in place to make sure that you don't have clock management issues. All I want to say about that is that's a developing story, and maybe that's something we can address a little bit later when I have a little bit more to provide up as it pertains to clock management. But I'm worried. I'm always worried about that. I think you were generally kind of always worried about that with Brian Kelly, as successful as a head coach as he was.
I go back to Holtz. I was worried about Lou Holtz's clock management at times. I thought they wasted clock at the end of games because I was an angry fan, and I think every coach blows it because we're watching from afar and you think it's easy. But I know what you're saying. There's some specific examples we can come up with Kelly too, where you're like, what, why are you? No, this isn't where you go fast. This is where you go slow. But that's just a tough. That's one of those things where the man in the arena has a harder job than us deciding who managed the clock improperly. Because you know what? When they scored that touchdown against Ohio State or against Oklahoma State to go up 28-7, I didn't think to myself, man, they should not have passed that ball to Mike Mayer for that touchdown.
At the end of the first half.
In retrospect, it did go too soon.
The touchdown was fine. It was the two plays before it.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, that's tough.
Question from Pin and Pole. Does this team have a tight end too, or is situation more likely to dictate playing time?
I think that's going to be an evolving position all year. I would, I'd lean towards Kevin Bauman to start the season. But if you told me at the end of the year that Eli Raerden and Holden and even maybe even Holden Stays were 2A or 2B, that wouldn't surprise me either.
And I would have said Mitchell Evans involved in that before he got hurt.
I would have said Mitchell Evans would be the clear tight end.
Well, right. So there is a clear number two now, and it's Kevin Bauman. I mean, I still think it would have been Bauman going into the start of August practice. But with Evans out, I mean, he is the clear number two. And I continue to say that I like Kane Barong. I think that he does some things in the receiving game that only Mayer can do. Of course, Mayer does it extremely better.
I know that, yeah.
And Raerden. Now, that's evolving. We'll see.
And that would be Kane Barong in a situation likely to dictate playing time, right? Because that's
too. You got to love the idea of when there's a second tight end on the field, he's going to get a great matchup.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
there's no doubt he's going to get a great matchup. They're not who's number 81 over there? Well, who gives a damn? Look at number 87. You know, I mean, I think he's going to get some pretty good matchups, whoever that is. When Mitchell Evans is there, what's the timetable on him?
Late metatarsal. So if that happened in July, surgery. It's not great for the season.
Kevin
Austin had surgery on July 31st and he broke it again in the second game back in mid-October at that Louisville game that no one will ever remember happened in a couple of years.
Yeah. Kevin Bauman has a chance to be a pretty good tight end, especially again, when he's on the field with Michael Mayer. Question from Woj to God. Chris Smith, another body on the defensive line or a guy that can make plays for this defense?
You know, I mean, I think there's eight guys that'll make more plays than Chris Smith, probably. I would think it's maybe devalue him to say just another body, though, because holding your gap completely as a nose tackle in this defense is making a play, too. I don't think you hear his name called a lot, but if Chris Smith comes in and when he replaces Jacob Lacy or Howard Cross or anybody inside and he's straight up, as Al Golden said, in 3-3, and he's holding his nose tackle right on the center. That's a pretty big, important part of your defense.
Probably, I would lean more towards another body than a guy who's making plays. But I think you got to look at it in context of what Notre Dame's going to ask from Chris Smith. They're going to ask, what, like 15 snaps a game? Yeah, like,
right. True nose backup doesn't get more than that.
Yeah, that's you're not making a lot of plays at that position.
I'm fairly confident he can hold the point of attack, which is step number one for a nose.
Yeah.
I saw some things at Harvard, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the competition. It's just focusing on Chris Smith and how he moves off snap of the football. I saw some things that were really, really quick. I mean, like a guy that, could you two gap with him? Now, seeing him in person the other day, I don't quite feel the exact same way. So, I mean, I guess I feel somewhere it's between the two. And Pete, if you say it leans more towards another guy, okay. I mean, I get that. He's coming from Harvard. playing against a lower level of competition, but I think he can do some things. And I think he's strong enough to hold the point of attack, which is job number one for a guy in his position.
Indy 11. Haven't heard anything in the first four practices about kickers and punters. Can you give us any insights or updates?
We haven't seen the kickers. We did see the punters from a football field and a half away width-wise.
those were some punts.
Yeah, those are there was a well, we Blake Groupie is not going to be the starting punter.
Oh, Pete, the two punts that went
that was Groupie.
An aggregate 3 yards was Blake Groupie.
Yeah. I had binoculars with me. That was Groupie that kicked those.
That was an exaggeration on 3 yards, but 30 aggregate would not be an exaggeration.
But yeah, I do think it's interesting because I don't think there's any doubt the guy with the longest leg is McPherson.
Yeah, but, he looks like an athlete.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, his follow through is beautiful. Again, that was high school film or camp film, kicking camp film, and he's got a beautiful leg swing. But can he be consistent? And I don't think. I mean, Sott does not have a beautiful leg swing. He punches it a little bit more, but he's probably going to be more consistent. You know, kick returns and punt returns. Those that subscribe to Irish Illustrated know who those guys are. That was going to be my smart aleck comment. Nice. out of the box was that, can I give you any insight? Yeah. If you subscribe to Irish Illustrated, you know some of this. Nice. There, I said it. I should have just said it off the cuff. Next, we'll see about kickers.
Yeah, kickers should happen soon. They might start a practice with it. I would not be surprised if we see a starting practice versus a special teams thing there. Next from ND Bass 2001. 2024 recruiting appears to be going well. Seems like the 2023 recruiting is about to hit a wall. A lot of top targets seem to have other schools taking the lead. Is this just what recruiting is at this level?
You tend to hit a wall when you already have 23 verbal commitments in a class. I mean, we did. You know, on June 30th, July 1, July 3, July 4, they got Jagasaw, Bell, Flores, and Christian Gray. And then, you know, right at the start of August, you got Osbury and Minnick and Edwards and Peter Jones. I don't know how many strings of recruits you expect to get, especially now that the season is starting. But, I mean, you already have 23 commitments in a class. They're not going to keep pouring in.
I would hope that most readers or listeners know that Notre Dame is not going to finish number one in the country in 2023 and that's fine. But they'll almost certainly finish in the top five. And I understand like that means they're moving down the recruiting rankings, but that's not really the point. They're running out of room. They're down to a few guys. If they can get like one or two of them, I think they will be quite thrilled.
I think the question kind of comes from keeping Keely?
Yeah, no.
Is losing the momentum?
No
like,
doubt.
Yeah, that's the, yeah, which is yeah, like,
in awesome. Fairness, that's Andy,
something
Bass,
else entirely. That's something else. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. But to expect Notre Dame to finish number one in recruiting this year would be like expecting Marcus Freeman to win a national title this year. I mean, right out of the gate, you expect them to be number one?
No, but they're there now, and they're not right out of the gate number one in football.
No. So, well, no, that's true. But, I mean, I agree with Pete. They're not going to finish number one. But significant progress has been made. You have to admit that. Now, if they lose Keely, it's massive. If you lose Bowman or Bowen, that's a huge loss too, but it's the Keely one. I think we talked about this last week. It's the Keely one that really not certainly safeties aren't dime a dozen, but man, true great pass rushers. That's where it starts. And so Keely would be a huge blow.
Final question from Errol Ryan. After what you've seen so far in fall camp, are you more or less confident in the offense this season?
I'm the same.
Unchanged.
Yeah, I'm the same. Maybe we feel a little bit better about the offensive line. You know, not that we weren't high on them, but seeing them in person, standing behind them and watching them work, it's like, wow, they do have a chance to be really good. But you're young at quarterback. You're limited numbers-wise at running back. And over the course of a 12-game regular season, the lack of depth at wide receiver is going to hurt you. So, having said all that, we figured that the defense would have a chance to be really, really good to great. and the offense, they're going to have to find a way to bridge the gap at times.
Yeah, and have not seen, in fairness to Errol Ryan, we have not seen them tackle yet. That starts today. We won't really see them tackle. That full practice August 19th is going to be pretty important for us to form some opinions, because that's the one we're going to see them tackle a lot. I don't know how much you're going to tackle in the first five segments. Boy, we need to get a nice period five here at one of these practices while they're tackling each other, right? This is too much drill work for period five.
Somebody asked me, like, when they read the offensive report yesterday, it's like, quarterbacks, question mark? I mean,
they exist.
Yeah, I saw them throwing to student managers. It was really impressive. They're just what, you know, the five periods just makes it very difficult. But anyway, we'll be having a couple more of those coming up here real soon. Yeah. As we wrap up this edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, thank you for joining us.